At the Lausanne Congress, the first Lausanne Congress, 1974, Francis Schaeffer gave a talk, later published under the title Two Contents, Two Realities. Let me quote from what Schaeffer called the two contents. The first content is sound doctrine. Schaeffer said, Christianity is a specific body of truth. It is a system, and we must not be ashamed of the word system. There is truth, and we must hold that truth. The second content is honest answer to honest questions. Schaeffer said, Christianity is truth. Truth that God has told us, and if it is truth, it can answer questions. Truth and answers. That's the focus of this presentation. Half a year ago, it was the 1st of April, a day when we, at least in Europe, have official permission to fool people. This year's best prank came from an online gaming store called GameStation. In the site's terms and conditions, which you have to confirm that you have read and understood before placing the order, they had buried an immortal soul clause. It read like this. By placing an order via this website on the first day of the fourth month of the year 2010, Anno Domini, you agree to grant us a non-transferable option to claim, for now and forevermore, your immortal soul. Should we wish to exercise this option, you agree to surrender your immortal soul and any claim you may have on it within 5 working days of receiving written notification from GameStation. The company even included a hyperlinked option which said, click here to nullify your soul transfer, and they rewarded astute shoppers with a coupon worth £5. But only 12% of the buyers noticed this. 88% of that day's transaction included human souls. 7,500 human souls. We Europeans, it seems to me, have in a similar, careless way sold our souls and dispersed our rich inheritance. Europe has become the prodigal son. Like Asia Minor and North Africa, one parts of the world with thriving churches, Europe has denied the gospel and replaced it with other convictions, preeminently secularism. I have 4 main points. The first is the European lesson. Of course, there is many different kinds of Europe, the Roman Catholic South, the Greek Orthodox East, the Protestant North. You have the divide between East and West and the former communist countries. But there is still enough things to bind us together to make it meaningful to talk of one continent, Europe. And in order to understand the dramatic change for the church in Europe, we need to understand some of the historical background. There is cause and effect. The secularization of Europe has not come just out of the blue. Simplifying to the extreme, there are 2 root systems of ideas in Europe, which both goes back to antiquity. Humanism, with its roots in Athens, and Christianity, with its roots in Jerusalem. Let's begin with Christianity. Christianity, starting with Jesus of Nazareth, where God is gloriously revealed. The belief in Jesus spread throughout the Roman Empire and became the dominant faith from the 4th century onward. And then the church grew, but gradually also much of the gospel was lost or at least confused with other ideas and rediscovered. And we had times of reformation and we had strong revivals. And 100 years ago, we had a seemingly strong church in Europe. And yet, at the beginning of this century, the Christian faith has, so to speak, lost in Europe. Why is that? Why, with this history, are we struggling on my continent? The answer is, to a large degree, to be found in the other root system of Europe, that is humanism. Putting man at the center of everything and making him the measure of all things. An idea that was promoted by Protagoras and other Greek philosophers. It was rediscovered during the Renaissance in the 15th century and became the central idea during the Enlightenment in the 18th century and onwards. The Enlightenment was at the start mainly a perspective accepted by philosophers and artists, the intellectual elite of Europe. It affected science and academia, which at that time affected just a few or a small portion of the people. But gradually, the Enlightenment perspective has taken over much of our culture, and today, both science and academia affect everyone. And Europe has become a secular culture. One very interesting thing here is science. Of course, science, in one sense, has its roots amongst the Greek philosophers. But modern science, with its empirical investigation into the actual state of affairs, has mainly Christian roots. When modern science grew during the 15th century and onward, it had basically Christian motivation. We are called to understand God's world, to think God's thought after him. But as time went by and more of nature were understood, which of course is not the problem for Christianity, science was hijacked and turned against its mother. And today it's often looked upon science as if it has established the Enlightenment perspective. The resulting situation at the beginning of the 21st century is that Europe is a cut flower who has lost its root in the truth. Europe has become a deeply secular culture where God is absent in the public domain and where the underlying worldview very often is naturalism. Please note that secularism in Europe is not the skepticism of a few individuals who challenge the norm. Rather, it has become the norm. It is viewed as a positive liberation from superstition and from religious power play, which held people in bondage in previous generation. Most importantly, secularism is not seen as a worldview in itself on the same level as Christianity and therefore a competitor to Christianity, but as the natural and neutral starting point which should be shared by all reasonable persons. And then, of course, after that, you are free to add certain subjective things like Jesus or Buddha or something else to your life. This is what philosopher Charles Taylor has called exclusive secularism, a secularism determined to exclude all transcendent reference points from cultural, social, and political life. The lesson for the global church to learn is this. Do not ignore the secular outlook at the stage when it only affects a small portion of the population and everything still seems all right for the church. Today, secularism dominates science, academia, and media, which in so many ways influences the whole world. How could this happen? How could Enlightenment thinking take over in Europe? Part of the answer is the faulty responses given by the church. One response was compromise. Many Christian theologians and leaders felt compelled to adjust their theology to the Enlightenment philosophy. They seemed to think that the scientific method demanded them to accept Enlightenment, as if the scientific findings meant that God was out of the picture. So in order to be seen as intellectually honest, they started to deny miracles and revelation and the supernatural. And this is, of course, the liberal theology that has intoxicated the European churches so deeply. An example, 100 years ago, one of the most influential thinkers was the German sociologist and theologian Ernst Troeltsch. He said this: "We are no longer in the business of fixing permanent dogmas from an inspired Bible. Instead, we formulate teaching which express the essence of Christian piety." In other words, he goes not from theology to practice, but he goes from Christian piety and practice, and from that he formulates what is theology. By becoming infected with Enlightenment thinking, the church has become her own gravedigger, or to change the metaphor, the church has been hijacked by secular philosophies and its offspring, liberal theology. The other response, the other faulty response, was withdrawal. It came from more Bible-believing people who did not want to accept the Enlightenment challenge. They wanted to hold on to the whole gospel, but they tried to do it mostly by withdrawal from culture, from academia and from science. This is the more pietistic and later charismatic attitude. Don't misunderstand me. There's so much to welcome and admire in pietistic and charismatic theology. But there has been a dangerous weakness in its isolation from culture and in the neglect of the intellectual challenges. There has been too little teaching on the worldview level of Christianity. There has too often been a separation between mind and heart and between mind and the Holy Spirit. And the result is that the church has forfeited the intellectual challenge. Europe has a long history based on the Christian faith, but claiming it's not possible to believe that Christianity is true, Europe has turned away. Europe was first lost for the gospel in the areas of ideas. If Europe is going to be won for the gospel once again, it must be won also, not only, but also in the area of ideas, because that's the point of departure. A new global inquiry showing people's beliefs and values was recently published. Question number 42 in that inquiry was, how important is religion? And people who ticked the box, religion is very important in my life, the statistics is like this. In many countries, you will find extremely high figures. Senegal 98%, Indonesia 95%, Brazil 78%, India 74%. Over to the US, it's lower, but it's still the majority, 57% think religion is very important in my life. If you move over to Europe, the picture drastically changes. The highest figures are in Poland, 33%. Germany, 25%. Britain, 19%. Hungary, 15%. And in my country, 8%. Now, it's a world of difference if 98% of the population thinks religion is very important, or 8% thinks religion is very important. In the latter case, religion generally, and Christianity specifically, is seen as having nothing to do with truth and reality any longer. And it creates a strong attitude of dismissal and cynicism. So people can say like this about theology and talk about God: theology is searching in a dark cellar at midnight for a black cat that isn't there. Now, some people then say, well, this is Enlightenment, the modern thinking. What about postmodern thinking and culture? Haven't we passed the modern Enlightenment area and moved beyond it to the postmodern area where people don't believe in truth any longer? And that could open some doors for us. Many think that the change from modern to postmodern thinking will somehow solve our problem and open the door for the gospel again. And they think that Christian apologetics has been made obsolete since people do not care about truth. I think this is wrong. First, even though postmodern thinking is influential in some areas, Western culture in generally is far from postmodern. Let me give you some example. Take science. as one example. It operates on the general assumption that there is an external reality about which we can have true knowledge. This reality is the same for everybody around the globe. The debate on global warming is a current example. It presupposes from all sides that there are universal truths. Or take ethics and the discussion about homosexuality. The new view on homosexuality, that it should be affirmed and embraced, which is now the dominant view in my country, is not seen as relative or context-dependent. It is seen as the right view that should be exported to other cultures, and others should be convinced about it. Or take the debate about religion and the new atheists, who are making absolute claims about religion. Now, I'm not denying the influence of postmodern thinking. It affects the way many people think and react. What I am denying is that the modern perspective has been replaced by the postmodern. It has not. Along similar lines, we need to think right about postmodern spirituality. The postmodern is born out of the modern, which is naturalistic, and that naturalism has never been challenged. In postmodern spirituality, therefore, there is no real transcendence, only immanence, only pantheism and mysticism. There is no real God outside the human experience. Even though words like God or prayers are used, they're used within a different framework, a different worldview, without a real transcendence. As Christians living in a secular culture, we now therefore have a double challenge. The concept of truth is challenged from the postmodern philosophers, and the content of truth is challenged by the Enlightenment perspective. The lesson to learn is this: don't underestimate the enemy. Secularism and secularity goes hand in hand with both the modern and the postmodern perspective, and can even affirm a dose of spirituality as long as it is grounded in man only. At the same time, it has devastating hole in its armor. The project of liberating man from God simultaneously undermines man. Without God, the significance and worth of the individual is evaporating. Our aspirations and longing ends in nothing, and human existence in the final analysis is without meaning. In the Manila Manifesto, we can read this. We also affirm that apologetics, namely the defense and confirmation of the gospel, is integral to the biblical understanding and mission and essential for effective witness in the modern world. Paul reasoned with people out of scriptures with a view to persuading them of the truth of the gospel. So must we. In fact, all Christians should be ready to give a reason for the hope that is in them. I will end by just referring to what could be called the world's first Christian sermon in Acts 2. In Acts chapter 2, the context of Peter's sermon is a context of bewilderment, amazement, perplexity, and even ridicule in relationship to what God is doing to this new community in Jerusalem. And Peter had to respond to two different questions, where the first question is, what does this mean? The things that is happening in Jerusalem and the things that the first Christian believed, what does it mean? And you can find five very different aspects in Peter's response to that question. Later on, he had to answer the question, what shall we do? Peter presents the gospel, firstly, as reasonable. It's reasonable truth. He begins by saying, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say. So he has a message that can be explained in words and rationally understood. He invites them to listen carefully, and thereby asking them to analyze and probe his message. It's public truth. Peter refers to and underlines that it is about a shared reality And he appeals to the knowledge of his hearers. He points to their knowledge. Three times he says, Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did among you through him, as you yourself know. It was public truth. Thirdly, it was historical truth. The gospel is good news about what has happened in history. And this has been, there's witnessed to that, up to 600 people who saw Jesus alive after his resurrection. Fourthly, the message is a biblical truth. Peter quotes Joel once and David twice. There is coherence in the unfolding of God's revelation in the Old and the New Testament. And finally, the gospel is convincing. Peter says, therefore, let all Israel be assured of this. God has made this Jesus, whom you've crucified, both Lord and Christ. And thousands of people came to faith. We may have somewhat different situations than Peter had in Jerusalem, but I think we should share his attitude of presenting a reasonable, public, historical, biblical, and convincing truth. Therefore, we have an urgent need to upgrade apologetics and reaffirm its importance. We need to equip Christians so they can stand firm in the faith, and we need to challenge the growing impact of secularism and secularity with the wonderful truth and wonderful life of the gospel.